Hi, this is Dennis Byrd, and you're listening to the 5%ers podcast, where we'll learn why it is that only 5% of people who lose weight never gain it back. I'll bring my expertise in life coaching, my advanced studies in psychology, and my own personal story of beating obesity so we can learn new ways of thinking and adopt powerful strategies to lose weight and keep it off for life. Thanks for joining me today, and you're listening to the 5%ers podcast, episode number 33, Can You Simplify Your Way to Better Health and a Better Life? And this is an interview with Joel Zaslavsky. Well, I think you're really going to enjoy this interview today. I had a conversation with a fellow Minnesotan by the name of Joel Zaslavsky, and he's the creator behind the blog The Value of Simple, and he also has a podcast called Smart and Simple Matters. And I stumbled across Joel in a search when I was really starting to investigate really what simplicity and minimalism is about. And what I found was Joel and a podcast that he does called Smart and Simple Matters, and then also an initiative he's behind called Simple Rev, which he'll talk about here in just a little bit. I know that this might seem like an interesting topic, and you might be wondering, well, how does simplicity and minimalism really fit into health? You know, simplifying our life can really bring about a lot of freedom, peace of mind. It can bring about, I think, just a better understanding of who we are and what's really important to us. And all of those things can have a direct impact on our health. The less stressed we are, the more in tune we are with who we are as people and our core values, I think the better the health we're going to have, whether it's better physical health or mental health or emotional health. And so I'm just going to go ahead and cut to the interview because I think you'll really enjoy what Joel has to say. And I'm going to put notes into the show notes on my website so that you can link to all the different websites that he talks about, including Joel's Value of Simple. So here we go. Well, Joel Zaslavsky, welcome to the 5%ers podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here, Dennis. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have another Minnesotan on the podcast. I don't always get that. So it's fun to have somebody who's in the same neck of the woods as me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so when I make all of my cold, wintry projections, somebody else will get that. But I just wanted to spend a minute just about how I found out about you. Over the last 6 months or so, I've been researching the whole issue of simplicity and minimalism and really making life better as a result of simplifying life. And I started off actually just kind of interested in tiny houses. And so I started researching tiny houses and, you know, looking at that and what that really came, you know, to me was about. It wasn't just about the square footage of the house, is that people were really simplifying their life. So I started doing Google searches on simple life, simplicity. And I came across your podcast, Simple Rev, that you do with, I believe, Dan Hayes. And then from Simple Rev, which, you know, we can talk about a little bit later, I found your other podcast and then Dan Hayes and his wife's podcast. I think it's Simple Life Together. And I think your other podcast is named Smart and Simple, or no, I think I got that wrong. What is it?
Smart and Simple Matters. Boy, it's this tangled web of podcasts. You start with All Things Simple Rev, then you go to Smart and Simple Matters, and then there's Simple Life Together. Oh boy, that's a lot of simple, isn't it?
It is a lot of simple. So just keeping it straight can be a little bit challenging. So that's how I found out about you, and I started listening to both of your podcasts, Smart and Simple Matters, and then the Simple Rev podcast with you and Dan Hayes. And then I just started listening to Simple Life Together, and I've found tremendous value in those. And the reason why I wanted to have you on today is that although my main concept of my podcast, the 5%ers, is that when we look at people who are struggling with their health and specifically with their weight, only 5% of people who lose weight can keep it off for more than 2 years. That it's a small percentage of people who have lifelong weight loss. And my whole goal is to really help people understand more the psychological aspect and the lifestyle aspect of changing how you think about life and how you approach life so that you can have the health that you want and really maintain the health that you want for the long term, because diets come and go and often they fail. And what I really wanted to talk with you about was just your whole journey to simplicity, because I think simplicity could add a lot of value as a lifestyle to help people de-stress and to really focus on what's important. So if you could just share with the listeners just some of your background and how you got to this simplicity movement, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I am about 35 years old, and I was a corporate guy for the first decade of my life coming out of college. And it wasn't intentional to go the corporate route. They, RBC Wealth Management, it's a financial services company in downtown Minneapolis. They were the ones to offer me a job out of college. And I said, as a communications major, great. Yeah, someone's willing to pay me to do something? Okay. Yeah. I'll wire transfer rich people's money around the world for you. Mm-hmm. And of course, that grew and I advanced and I climbed the career ladder as I was encouraged to do because I was following a script. Not my script, which I now know, but the traditional script of middle class America, which is get a good university education, get a stable job, maybe meet your wife, get a house, fill it with a couple of dogs, you know, have move to a nice neighborhood. And I'm checking all of these boxes, Dennis, just one after another after another. And at no point in time did I think, is this what I really want? Which is crazy to live the first 30 years of your life not really asking yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? Who is the one influencing me to do this? Is this something internal that's driving me? Or are these external forces, whether it's my parents or social norms or advertisers, that are making me do what I do? And I came to the realization in April 2010, when my wife Melinda told me that she was pregnant with our first son, Grant. It was like a lightning bolt just ripped right through me. And I thought, oh, wow, 8 months from now, I'm going to be a papa. Wow. And there's a lot of great things about my life, but if I don't make some major changes, I'm basically going to be a deadbeat dad. And I know that sounds really strong, but I was, despite all the trappings of success, I was staying up until 3 o'clock in the morning on weeknights playing World of Warcraft, which is a very addictive video game.
Right.
And then having to wake up at six to go to a job where I worked 11 hours purely for the paycheck, and just rinse and repeat. And it was incredibly unsustainable, and I was becoming very unhealthy as a result of it. And I thought, that needs to go in order for me to be a good parent. And what else needs to go? Like, what else do I need to cut out of my life in order to make room for this beautiful child that's going to come? And I started getting into minimalist blogs, becoming mm-hmm. minimalist, Joshua Becker's website, Courtney Carver's Be More With Less. And it was kind of like you with podcasts and simple living. I went down a similar path with blogs first and then podcasts. And that was really my entryway into the world of simple living, was primarily through minimalism, right after I started this exploration of things need to change and what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that this is a story that I hear a lot, because my day job is as a career management consultant. And I work with people, executives all the way down through individual contributors in companies who have been just recently displaced, they've been laid off. And for a lot of people, you know, it's a big wake-up call for them, because now that they're off the grind of whatever job they're in, now they're starting to wake up to the fact that, you know, I wasn't happy there anyway. And this hasn't been working for a long time. And what I've really figured out is that things in motion tend to stay in motion, one of Newton's first principles. And sometimes you can get on a track and it just kind of takes over. And then 10, 15, 20 years, and sometimes 30 years later, you wake up and you go, okay, so I just dedicated all this time to this company. They lay me off. I don't even know what I want to do anymore. I don't even know if I want to go back to what I was doing. So I think your story really resonates with so many different people that are listening, because I think it's a pretty common issue.
It is. The thing is, I never slowed down enough to think, you know, what should I be doing? What kind of relationship should I have? Should I have relationships of convenience, or should I have deliberate relationships of people of my choosing, as opposed to just the folks who are around me? Again, it's for me, the simple life, it means something different to everybody. Some right. people get into it through yoga or meditation or tiny houses or the slow food movement or trying to just get their own energy from sources that they are morally and ethically aligned with. There's so many entry points into the world of simple living. But for me, it's really about just slowing down and valuing slowing down and not racing from one commitment to another. And then being very intentional about what you think, what you do, what you believe, who you surround yourself with. Those are the core tenets of simple living to me. And fortunately, by embracing them, my life now, I call it my personal renaissance that happened in April 2010. Actually, that's my wife's term for it. I appropriated it with her permission because I liked it so much. And I look the same, but I am a fundamentally different person, not just for me, but for everybody that I interact with. And the cool thing is I now feel better physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And the impact that I'm able to have on my community, whether it's local or whether it's through my website, through anyone who speaks English, is so much larger than it was before. And I actually care. I care more about people. Before I had this take first mentality, what can I extract from company? What can I extract from my relationships? And now through Simple Living, I've completely flipped that on its head. And I try to enter into every single conversation and relationship as, what can I do for you? How can I help you? What's your story? And I've gotten a lot further leading with generosity than I ever did trying to extract things from people. It's kind of funny how that works.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that, you know, I do work in the corporate environment, like where you came out of. I mean, different line of work. I'm more in a helping profession. And that's been my continual theme that in my entire career has been helping people on one level or another. But one of the things that I see in the corporate world is that personal values and what's really intrinsic to who we are as people really isn't relevant in a lot of corporations. They just don't care. It's all about, hey, what can you produce? What's the bottom line? You know, what's the revenue? And it's kind of the soft side of things. But if corporations could realize how important that was to the overall satisfaction of an employee, I think you'd have better run companies, more productive companies, because when you align yourself with your deepest core values, life goes well.
Absolutely. And to be fair, I mean, I like my old employer. My wife works for Best Buy corporate headquarters, and they're a good company, and she likes it there. There's nothing inherently wrong with working for a corporation. The problem is, the, as you were mentioning, the expectation of conformity and the social norms that are enforced within there. So now I view myself as an authentic person. There's not a different version of Joel based on the social context or my physical environment. There's just pretty much one dude now, a dude who refers to himself as a dude. And I'm okay with that. If people don't particularly like the way that I talk or that I think or that I dress, that's okay. I don't mind that anymore. There's 7.2 billion other people in the world who might be useful if I'm not relevant to somebody that I'm interacting with. But it's the level of authenticity that you can bring. And kind of to the themes of your podcast here, I mean, think in any company setting, whether it's two people or whether it's 1,000 people, somebody trots out that tray of donuts, or, you know, everybody's going to get some pizza or whatever it is that you are, and everybody is eating the same thing. You feel obligated to eat that, even if you don't really want to, even if you're trying to be more healthy or you're trying to be more conscious about what it is that you're ingesting and how your body responds to it. But when you're in certain kinds of environments, and environment is everything, not just the people that you surround yourself, but, you know, what kind of food is present, the candy jar at the end of the aisle, then there's all these kinds of temptations and there's all these expectations that start to creep in, and you start doing things where you don't even notice it anymore. Right. You just start taking a handful of candy as you walk by someone's desk without just mindlessly doing it. And that's a big problem.
Well, it's kind of interesting because it's countercultural to pass up the donut tray, to say no to the candy, no to the cookie. And I'm in that kind of environment where every day, you know, there's stuff brought in all the time, and it gets little tiring to keep saying no, but it really is countercultural. And that's where I was kind of thinking the tie into simplicity is how simplicity really is countercultural. I had to, you know, go up to Costco the other day, and, you know, I like Costco for their organic vegetables, and, you know, because we have a family and we burn through all kinds of veggies every week. And so it's a great place to get your vegetables and your fruit. And, you know, you're just bombarded from the first time that you walk through the doors with buy, 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 you know, and this gadget's going to make your life better. This product is going to make you happier. And so I think as I've been researching this simplicity movement, as I've tried to simplify my life, it really is, I do get that sense that you're in a a countercultural movement. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. I wish it weren't that way. And to me, it's kind of silly that simple living, you know, not being consumed by consumerism, appreciating being outside in nature and not having anything going on, enjoying silence as opposed to busyness and wearing busy like a badge of honor. Like, to me, the fact that simple living is unconventional is strange. And all it takes is a brief history lesson. We don't need to go back very far in humanity's timeline to realize that for 99.999% of our existence as humans, we'd led a simple life. Right. And that was a source of happiness and fulfillment and community building. And whether you think that it started with the introduction of agriculture or the Industrial Revolution, we have deliberately and both unconsciously given up the simple life for an alternative of a life of materialism, for a constant chase to be more, to do better, quicker, faster, stronger. And we've proven over thousands and thousands of years that that's not how humans are built. That's not where we get our reward. That's not where we make our largest impact and where our highest potential is. Traditionally, and still in the 21st century, it is with simple living and with the principles of it. So yeah, you're right. It is a countercultural. And every time I think about that, I just kind of think to myself, I know roughly how we got that way. And I would love to see the shift back. And I think so many more people, I know, because I've seen just in my life and in all of the bloggers and podcasters and people who have made these changes, I've seen the joy, the impact, the sense of belonging that people have when they just opt out of mainstream culture and consumerism and embrace something else, an alternative.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it clears away kind of a layer of gunk that allows you to get into touch with who you really are. And I think one of the things that materialism does is it allows us to avoid those questions. Not everybody, I think, is comfortable with who they are. They're not comfortable with asking those questions. And so it's easy to buy. It's easy to stay busy. And it's kind of a default that they've, you know, allowed to creep into their lives. And it takes some effort to jar us from that. And I think if we relate it back to kind of the weight loss issue, is that there's an organization out there called the Center for Weight Control. And it's basically some researchers that have been looking at people who've had long-term weight loss success, because it's so pitiful. It's such a small number of people. And they said the biggest thing that contributes to their long-term success is usually some type of kind of crisis. It's been a healthcare crisis. It's been maybe even looking at a picture of themselves and just being disgusted with what they see. That there's some kind of a shift that goes on, that all of a sudden people start waking up that, like, you know, I can't live life like this anymore. This just isn't working. And I find that sometimes what materialism does is it blunts our responsiveness, you know, to that internal stirring that things need to change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I apologize, but I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts, and I came across one of your podcasts where basically the title was something like, you know, simplicity is not simple, that there's actually complexity to it. And you had a whole panel of hosts on that were contributing to the talk. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, I've got two kids. Both my wife and I work. We live in the suburbs of Minneapolis. You know, we both have commutes, although not too bad. And as you look at kind of living modern life with kids and, you know, responsibilities and things like that, what does simplicity look like, and what's complex about it, and what's easy about it?
Boy, that's a big, big question, Dennis.
Yeah.
Some people get simple and easy confused. Mm-hmm. The two are not synonymous. And I actually got that mixed up for a while too, because what's easy, taking the donut isn't necessarily simple for your body to process that metabolically or anything else. Right. There is a trick there in that what's simple is often hard and it can be complex. Vicky Robin, who is one of the women that I had on this panel conversation, it was Smart and Simple Matters episode 52, which sadly didn't turn out all that great because of some audio issues that you and I aren't having, which is fortunate.
Yep.
But Vicky is one of the co-authors of Your Money, Your Life with Joe Dominguez, which is one of the pillar books from the 70s and 80s for a lot of people who are getting into simplicity. Another one, Dwayne Elgin, who is on the call too, a book called Voluntary Simplicity. Mm-hmm. And the conflict there is right now in the year 2014, being like opting out of the mainstream culture and the way that people traditionally think and do and act and put on their consumer hat, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Because you are always, there's always, you're talking about physics principles, like there's always friction and you're always swimming upstream against everything else, against what government policy is, against what corporations are trying to do, what advertisers are trying to convince you to do. And it's really hard. And one of my goals through Simple Rev and through the people that I surround myself with is how do we make the simple, sustainable choice the default one? Like it used to be, and it can be again, but there's enormous layers, a lot are which invisible, we've just accepted them for what they are, that we have to break through in order to start dissolving the pillars of power underneath all of these forces that are conspiring to keep us in a tizzy, keep us down a path that, what I'm not just talking about environmentally unsustainable, I'm talking about spiritually unsustainable too, in terms of what's fulfilling. Mm-hmm. There's, and if you want specific examples, I can get into it. I'm sure the people who are listening, they're like, boy, this is all very philosophical so far. If you want me to get practical and more into the how-to, I can
do please. It. Yeah, please do.
Any particular direction you want me to take it? Because I could take it about 100 different ways.
Yeah, I mean, just give kind of an illustration of a purchase you made or didn't make as a result of your philosophy and of your desire for simplicity.
So one of the principles, I picked this up from Courtney Carver, Be More With Less, is when you want something other than, say, you're at Costco in the grocery store and you need food, you don't really think about it. If organic strawberries are on sale and it's $3 a pound, you buy them because you want them and it's good. It's healthy. You view it as healthy. But let's say I'm a podcaster just like you. Mm-hmm. Let's say I want a new mixer and microphone to make my podcast sound more professional. So I need to, what I do now is I stop and I wait at least 30 days before I make a purchase. Mm-hmm. And during that time, it's not like I have a daily prompt on my calendar that reminds me, hey, Joel, it's time to think about whether it's worth buying that mixer or that podcasting microphone or not. At the end of that 30-day period, when I first think this could be something useful to me, I assess, do I truly need it? And that's the easy thing for me to do now, is very clearly identify needs versus wants versus desires. Because before I started my personal renaissance, it was all about impulse.
Right.
I could afford it, so I bought it. And what's the problem here, right? Like, no one's getting harmed in the process. But the thing is, there's a cost. Every time you buy something, it's not just the monetary cost. You also have to maintain it. If it's physical, it has to exist somewhere. So therefore, you might need a bigger garage or a bigger house in order to put all your stuff. You need to pay for the maintenance over time. So the thing that's big now is whenever I'm purchasing something that's some kind of a durable good, I realize that it's not just a one-time thing. It's a continual, until that thing doesn't exist in my house or in my life anymore, it's taking up space. If it's in a corner and it's cluttering up things, it's causing me even low levels of stress. And there's all of these different aspects of a purchase that I now consider, whereas before it was just like, I can afford it, I buy it. So that's one major change that I've made.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a great framework to approach life with, because, you know, what I've gotten from your podcast and from Dan, and if you can remind me his wife's name that they do the podcast together.
Vanessa, Dan and Vanessa Hayes.
Dan and Vanessa Hayes. Yeah, and I've been listening to, you know, their podcasts. And what I really like about the philosophy is it's not, simplicity isn't necessarily not buying things. It's about making sure that whatever you spend on really has value, you know, beyond just, you know, whether you're going to enjoy it for the next 5 minutes or, you know, 1 month or whatever, that it's got continual value, that it's actually improving your life versus going to be detracting from your life. And one of the things I've really noticed with people that I'm working with that are going through a job transition is the people who have really structured their lives well, where they've been, in a sense, frugal. You know, they haven't overspent. They don't spend to their means. You know, they kept, you know, they bought the small house when they were first married. They never, you know, got the bigger house with each promotion. You know, they've saved diligently, and they get, you know, into their 40s and their 50s and they get laid off, and they're basically, you know, yeah, everybody's worried about their next steps, but they're not panicking because they basically structure their life and they lived reasonably enough that they're not dependent on a paycheck to make life happen. And then there's other people that I meet who basically have bought too big of a house. They're leasing cars that, you know, they couldn't afford if they couldn't lease them. You know, they've run up the credit cards. And you basically, one of the questions I ask people, you know, in the first meeting, I say, how long can you go without working? And they'll say, I got 2 months. And then I'm upside down on my house. I'm, you know, I can't pay the bills. And they're panicked. And, you know, 6.5 years of coaching people through these types of issues, man, does it ever make you think twice about getting into debt, about buying things you don't need, because, you know, everybody's job's temporary at some point. And you realize, like, if you structure life better, you're going to be able to weather the storm so much better than if you, you know, basically have just wanton, you know, consumption of stuff.
Yeah. Or if you're comfortable being inside the storm and not having to worry about whether it's raining or not. If you can be happy when it's raining, that's a good thing too. And this kind of goes back to the feeling of abundance. So whenever I look around me, front, center, backwards, forwards, it doesn't matter. Like, I see all of this abundance in terms of my relationships and the food that's available to me. And in fact, one of the things that got me in trouble before was the overabundance, especially of food. I've improved, but I still have an issue specifically with sugar. And my sugar dragon will rear its ugly head from time to time. And I've binged on, like, going back to my bar mitzvah when I was 13 years old, my mom made me my own homemade cheesecake for my bar mitzvah. I didn't have to share it with my brother or any of my friends. She said, honey, it's all for you. And my eyes got, like, saucer-sized. And I thought, oh, my own cheesecake. 4 hours later, that whole thing was gone. I ate the whole thing, and I've had other episodes like that. So the thing is, I don't want sugary stuff anymore. Now, I still eat it from time to time, mostly because I'm stressed or for unhealthy reasons. But I don't view a life without lots of sugar as self-deprivation. I refuse to allow anybody to tell me, it's okay, it's a special occasion, just have a piece of birthday cake. Or why are you depriving yourself of the joy? And the thing is, food is only one source of potential joy out of hundreds. And I no longer, although I love food just like anybody else, I no longer try to get my most intense pleasure from the most sweet food that's out there. I realize that there's all of these things that are just as fulfilling, just as enjoyable as my mom's cheesecake, although it's really good, I assure you. She makes it from time to time, but I digress, than anything else that you can have. So it's part of it's mental, in that you need to reframe what deprivation looks like. And I do really well, and maybe other people have figured out, you know, what works and what doesn't, but I like restrictive paradigms. That's why I eat in a paleo way. I don't consider paleo a diet. To me, it's more of a lifestyle. Getting your vitamin D from the sun as opposed to from a pill. Getting your exercise from your body, you know, what your body can naturally do, or sprinting down the street instead of having to go to the gym and do it. It's a similar thing with food, is that it's really restrictive, and I like that. It's liberating to me when I'm operating within a paradigm that says, there are some pretty strict boundaries in which you can operate in, but go nuts within these boundaries.
Right.
And I don't know if other people have just heard older life, everything's okay in moderation. Some people don't do well in moderation. I certainly don't. And I would encourage people listening who haven't done well in moderation to try to find some tools or some resources or maybe some kind of a framework that is a little bit more restrictive. They might feel a greater sense of freedom under some kind of more restrictive paradigm.
Absolutely. When I was just newly married, first month of marriage, I opened up the refrigerator and there was half a chocolate chip cookie wrapped up in cellophane. And I looked at my wife and go, "What's this?" She goes, "Oh, it was a cookie I had for lunch." And I said, "Well, why'd you wrap it up?" And she goes, "I only wanted half." And I said, "Who eats half a cookie?" I don't think I've eaten half of anything in my life. I mean, it's like, if there's a chocolate chip cookie, I'm having the whole thing and I'm having the other dozen too. I mean, chocolate chip cookies are definitely part of my weakness, but that's my wife. I mean, my wife, when she gets stressed, she doesn't eat. When I get stressed, I'm anything in sight, you know, just if I can put it in my mouth, you know, I'm wanting to do that because that's just how I'm wired. But I think, yeah, there are people who can handle a little bit of moderation. My wife is one of them. I'm kind of with you. I need a structure to operate within. And I do, that's one of the things that helped me lose about 80 pounds and keep it off for 10 years is I've had to put myself in a structure to realize, you know, if I eat these kinds of foods, they just don't work for me. They can work for other people.
Well, so what is your structure?
You know, I'm more in, I would call myself probably in more the low carb movement, paleo movement, you know. I'm so low carbio, I guess. I don't know. I'm not fully paleo. I'm not fully low carb, but I'm more
you're not
like
paleo orthodox. You're not,
yeah. Yep. But I'm more on just like try to eat whole foods. I mean, I think that's the thing about paleo that I really like. It's about, hey, get rid of the processed stuff. Just go to the way food grows, the way, you know, minimally processed. And that just resonates. And the more I get rid of the sugars and the processed foods, I just do better. I've got diabetes. Mm-hmm. Hasn't skipped a generation since my great grandmother. So it's rampant in my family. And so I've got to keep, you know, all those things out of my, really out of my diet because I'm very susceptible to, you know, high blood sugars and things like that. So basically cutting out the grains, cutting out the sugars, for me is the big thing. So it's got some aspects of paleo. It's got some aspects of the low carb thing. But I think it is, that in life, sometimes if we do have those parameters around us, it's not just effective, it's almost comforting. And what I was thinking about when you're talking about that is my first third of my career was in the nonprofit world working with at-risk youth. And when you've got a kid who's never had rules, who's never had parameters around their behavior, you know, kids would think that would be the optimal state, but it actually produces just terrible results. Kids need structure. They need to know, you know, if I do this, this consequence will happen, or this is acceptable and this is not, or if dad says no, it means no. And I think it's just another example that some people shy away from structure, but the reality is that a structure, in a sense, allows us more freedom to operate within it because we're not suffering the consequences of things outside of that structure or framework. So
absolutely.
I'm with you.
That kind of reminds me, if people aren't familiar with a website called Mark's Daily Apple, mm-hmm. it's run by a guy named Mark Sisson who believes in a primal way of life, which is relatively similar to paleo. There are differences. Yep. And it reminds me back to a blog post a couple of years ago where Mark was talking about how he fails to see how eating a food that leads to poor health or digestive upset or eating somehow depriving yourself.
Right.
And he says the only thing you're depriving yourself of is feeling like crap by not eating things like grains, for example, or things that are overly processed. That not eating that kind of stuff, that's a good kind of deprivation.
Yeah,
and absolutely. If anything, you know, eating the crap is depriving you of a full, healthy existence. And that really resonates with me. I mean, there's other people who, like Seneca, who is a Stoic from a couple thousand years ago, and he talks about how when you stop craving something, then it's no longer depriving yourself of it.
Right.
Which is always a goal of mine is I've stopped craving more stuff. I've stopped the only thing that I really can't get enough of, there's two things, Dennis, that I can't get enough of. One is friends. I know a lot of fellow minimalists who they have an inner circle and they stop. Me, I'm kind of a big time extrovert. And so I'm always trying to engage people and connect with people. And I'm never going to have enough friends. And the other thing that I'm never going to have enough of, and this is a relatively recent thing, is nothing. And I know that sounds really strange, but I love the feeling of nothingness. That's not to say the feeling of like emptiness inside, but whether it's through meditation or yoga or being comfortable with my own thoughts, just staring at a blank wall for 5 minutes, which I do from time to time. Mm-hmm. I love nothing, nothing in my schedule, nothing in my brain, and just that feeling of serenity, which I've never had before. And if you don't already know, or you want the listeners to explore, especially meditation, mm-hmm. helps tremendously. Absolutely. With cravings of all kinds, especially food cravings. So if people are looking for a easy, very that's something that's not time consuming at all, meditation could be a wonderful gateway into a world of slowing down your cravings for everything.
Oh, absolutely. And it reminds me of there's a podcast that I follow called Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor. They're also paleo guys. And they were on their podcast referencing a study where basically people could sit in a room with their own thoughts. Like they didn't have access to their iPhone. They could just sit there and kind of sit there with their own thoughts. Or they could receive electric shocks to get out of it. And 55% of the men gave themselves electric shocks, and 40% of the women gave themselves electric shocks. It's like they would rather have pain than be left with their own thoughts and to be left with their own inner workings. It's kind of interesting, but I think that's what happens in a lot of times of life, whether it's consumerism or whether it's busyness. It's just that we don't slow down enough to really think about what do we really want out of life, or we just aren't comfortable with the thoughts that are going on in our own world. And one of the mm-hmm. things that I talked about in my last podcast, actually it's going to be released tomorrow, it's entitled Stand Up and Get Outside. This summer, I think I've had more vacation than any summer I can remember, and that's partly because I have two sons, and they're both in the Boy Scouts, and they're at an age now where they're separating tracks, and so instead of going to one camp with them, I'm going to two camps over the summer. And what I love about those trips is we spend probably 90% of our day outside. And I find that when I'm out in nature, when I'm out in a beautiful surrounding, like how just slow my mind gets, how peaceful it gets, and I come to new awareness about really what I want my life to be about. And I get a better connection into the relationships with my sons and a different level of bonding with them because we're on these trips together. And I see so many people that I coach on a day-to-day basis that have been basically doing the grind for the last 10 years. And I'm privy to what people make, Joel. And I mean, I'm literally sitting in across the table from people who make 4 to 5, maybe even 10 times what I make in a year. And there's a price mm-hmm. to pay for that. I mean, you do not move up the ranks of a company without a huge price to your personal freedom, to your families. And it's pretty hard for these individuals to balance, you know, home life with work life, because when you're making upwards of 6 figures or more, you know, you don't own your time like you used to.
Yeah. So somebody, Joshua Fields is somebody that I follow, and he mm-hmm. talks about a corporation renting your brain, right. Basically setting up shop inside your head and then dictating your priorities and everything else. And that's kind of what it feels like sometimes. Yeah. And another buddy of mine, a guy named Andy Traub, he's a very spiritual man, and he talks about how he knows a lot of guys with really good jobs and really bad marriages, right. Or guys that don't have marriages at all because they've been so consumed by their career and focusing almost exclusively on it. And although I'm not a religious man, he also told me something else, which I grew up as I said earlier, I had a bar mitzvah. Like, I grew up very, very Jewish. I get religion. And he talks about, a lot of people think that God will provide for their family. Mm-hmm. And that's why they spend so much time at work, because, hey, God's going to take care of my family. Right. And he takes the other perspective, which is, God's going to provide for my business. So my job is to take care of my family and to spend a lot of time with them and to make sure we're cooking good meals together and that we're feeling a sense of belonging and feeling a sense of connection. And that, to me, is really important too. And especially in terms of just having time, like when you don't have time and you think it's starting to go back to the themes of your podcast, think about your food choices. You grab whatever's available because that's what's available and that's what's easy. And again, going back to simple living, like, simple living isn't necessarily easy. Sometimes it requires you to prep more, to grow your own food, more cooking time, more time at the dinner table. Instead of trying to sprint and get done with dinner in 10 minutes, you savor and you enjoy and you're grateful for the food, you're grateful for the company, and you might take an hour at the table. All of these things have both pros and cons. But for me and for my experiences over the last 4.5 years and all these other amazing people who I've been influenced by, the slow route, the simple route, is the sustainable route. And it's the long-term route of health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting is I can remember reading back probably about 4 years ago an article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune about a person who was going through the simplifying process. And it was kind of as a result of the recession. And it kind of like forced this individual to make some choices about how they were going to structure their life, but how counterintuitively, you know, people were like, oh, poor so-and-so had to sell their house and they had to pare down and they had to get rid of stuff. Yet counterintuitively, this person was finding a better quality of life, you know, more enjoyment, more peace, better satisfaction with who they were. And it, I think it's just, if anybody that it's, you know, listening to this podcast hasn't really looked at the simplicity movement, I really encourage you to do that, because I know, just, I'll get practical. Over the last few months, one of the things I did is I attacked my clothing in my closet, because every time I opened my closet, it was driving me crazy. And I pitched probably 2/3 of the clothes that I own and did a first cut. And I can tell you that every time I open my closet, it feels great. And it's just, it's a little thing, but there's something about simplifying even what you own opens up like emotional and mental freedom. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even hard to describe what that feels like, but that's the best I can do. And I feel like,
can I give people who are listening?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Just a couple of recommendations. I know a lot of people get into minimalism or simple living or downsizing or right sizing or whatever you want to call it through their wardrobe. And although I've never personally had a problem with it, I'm 6'6", so I'm a really tall dude, and it's really hard for me to get clothes. So I've never had a lot of variety in my clothing or my shoes. Again, never been a problem for me. But for the folks who have, there's two things. One is called Project 333. Okay. It's Courtney Carver's brainchild, and it encourages you to spend 3 months with 33 core articles of clothing. And those change. Like here in Minnesota, you need a different set of 33 articles of clothing in the summer than you do in the wintertime.
Absolutely.
So it's not year-round. And that's helped thousands of people. And I know folks who absolutely rave about the success that they've had with it and just the sense of relief from letting go of all those clothing. And then there's another option. It's the Minimalists of theminimalist.com. They have something called the Minimalist Game. Mm-hmm. And it works where the first day you get rid of one thing. That thing could be anything. It could be utensil in your kitchen drawer. It could be an article of clothing. And then the second day you get rid of two things. The third day you get rid of three. And by the end of your month, you've gotten rid of 500 things. And I know a lot of people who have applied that to clothing, although having 500 articles of clothing would be a lot to burn through, and just had a tremendous amount of, they almost get addicted to it. Like simple living. One of my friends, Mohammed Tohami of Midway Simplicity, which is another great website around simple living, very middle of the road, not an extreme in any way. Mm-hmm. He talks about simple living being something that can get very addictive. Mm-hmm. And that's been my experience too, is once you get a taste, it doesn't take a lot more to continue to go down that rabbit hole and realize, whether it's through tiny houses or whether it's through anything else that we've talked about today, mm-hmm. that there's this whole alternative world once you pop that bubble and you start exploring a little bit. And it's a wonderful place to explore.
Yeah, and I'll put all these different websites plus your podcasts and Dan and Vanessa Hayes, I'll put their stuff in the show notes as well, so it'd be easy for people to find it. I think we're just about out of time. So it's, I could keep talking for another hour. I love this stuff. It's just awesome. But it'd be great if you could just share with the listeners, where can they find you on the web? And then if you want to talk a little bit more about Simple Rev, that's a conference that's coming up in October here in the Twin Cities, and what that's about, and where they can find out more information about that.
Sure. Well, first of all, my home base is a website called Value of Simple.
Okay.
That's valueofsimple.com. And you can find my podcast, which is associated with that. It's called Smart and Simple Matters, that lives on Value of Simple. So if folks dig the whole podcasting thing, I'm in iTunes under Smart and Simple Matters. There's a lot of different ways to find it. It's syndicated in Stitcher and a whole bunch of other places.
Okay.
As for Simple Rev is two things. The first thing is it's a simplicity themed event where we're going to have people talking about the share economy and the social stigma associated with downsizing and nutrition. Jeff Sandquist is giving a great workshop at Simple Rev on simple nutrition. It's like this, there's this huge umbrella of simple living. And my goal and my co-organizer, Dan Hayes, we want to bring all these people who are practicing simple living in one way or another together, so that we can connect with each other, we can share stories, we can teach each other specific skills to expand the influence and the role of simple living in our society. So there's the event aspect, October 3rd and 4th. It's in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the University of St. Thomas.
Okay.
And then the longer term vision for Simple Rev is to be a hub for people who are into gardening or permaculture, like growing their own food. Like I said, there's all of these different entry points mm-hmm. towards simplicity or simple living. And we want to be a hub for people to come and feel like they are a part of a community, that they belong somewhere where they don't have to justify their choices, where they don't have to explain why it is that they do what they do.
Right.
All that is at Simple Rev. That's simplerev.com.
Okay. Gotcha. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. And full disclosure, I'm going. So if anybody else...
Yeah, and we're excited to have you.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And, when I first heard about it, I had a birthday this summer. My wife was saying, what do you want for your birthday? And I think this whole simplicity movement has even changed all that stuff. Because, I was thinking, well, maybe I get a Fitbit. I don't know. And all of a sudden I was thinking, what I want is I want an experience. And then I just said, there's this conference coming up that I really would like to go to. And I said, that would be a phenomenal birthday gift. It's in our backyard. It's like I can drive from home. It's like, for me, it's just the cost of the conference. I'm not coming from another state. So she said, that's great. So Simple Rev is actually my birthday gift. So it's the
all right.
Yeah, it's exactly what I was looking for. Experience versus stuff. So
there you go.
That'll be great. Well, Joel, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate the conversation we had. It's like I said, I could just keep going on this topic. It's just awesome. And I will put all the links in the show notes so people can find you. And I just encourage people to check out your blog, your podcast, and then the other people as well if they're interested in more in this topic. Well, Joel, thanks, and just have a great weekend. And we'll definitely see you in October, if not before. Take care.
Fantastic, Dennis.
Thanks for listening today. And if you found this podcast helpful, let your friends and family know about it. And if you will, go to iTunes and find the 5%ers podcast and leave a review and let other people know how it's been helpful. If you want to know more about being a 5%er, you can go to my website at dennisbird.org. And remember, folks, when it comes to your health, work hard, do your best, and never give up. Have a great day, everybody.